This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 281, The Sound of the Present. Of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, a co-host and a Michael on said show, and I'm joined today by another Michael and another co-host and founder of the show. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael. This is Michael Rowe, also a co-host and a podcaster and a friend of all Michaels everywhere. Well, not all. There's some I don't like. I mean, you know, you got to be honest.
Well, still, it's rare to find a Michael that you just can't find something in common with.
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely true.
no time like the present for a podcast, is it?
Yes.
So let's jump ourselves straight into a bunch of stories that have things to do with time and sounds and feelings and stuff. A whole range of stuff. Getting us started, let's kick us off with a Kickstarter. Was something that hit my feeds, I think it was actually yesterday. While it's been around for quite some time, this is a Kickstarter around the present. And the way this is described is that you can have a tool, a watch or a clock, or I guess some people don't have a watch. They just use their phone to figure out how to be on time. And then there are tools for being in time. So you might say, what?
Present.
And if you...
Present.
Yeah, being present. Being very present in the present. So I first saw this a few years ago because it was available for sale in the Museum of Modern Art store in New York City. You remember, Michael, back when we used to go places?
Yeah, and places like MoMA.
Yeah,
exactly. I like MoMA. MoMA's fun.
Well, their design store was always one of my favorite places to go just to see, you know, what was creative and what was where. So they have a series of measuring the present by doing so either across a day or how the moon moves or across the entirety of a year. So I'll just focus on the day because this is super cool. You've got dawn, you've got that sort of in between time, you've got dusk moving into night, and then it repeats itself again. So the clock has a hand, and you can see
a single hand
where are you in that span of time? And you can tell, I'm somewhere about halfway through the daylight hours, or it's just becoming night. And the notion behind all this was being much more comfortable with time, understanding time, how time is flowing, as opposed to segmenting it into hours, minutes, seconds, and being on time, and rather being in time.
Oh, don't you want the metric clock, right? It was all the way down to, you know, 100 ticks in an hour, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean,
so this is like the anti-metric clock, right? It's purely the seasonal aspect of either the day or, as you say, the moon. I did wonder about the year one. Do you adjust it for the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, I read here somewhere that the more expensive versions of these actually self-adjust for you. So it'll automatically, you know, identify for what time you're in. So I don't know if there's a radio clock, you know, a radio frequency measuring device in here that would automatically adjust. I didn't delve that deeply. But for like the year one, if you're in spring, in the middle of spring or beginning of spring or whatever, you might maybe need to adjust it just a little bit. And Michael, I've always been fascinated by clocks and time and measuring. And Once Upon a Time. that would be a good show title too. I've really, you know, was like, I wanted to be absolutely punctual on everything that I did, right? You know, like to the second, right? This is just a different way of thinking about time in general. And I'm reminded of the concept of passing time, wasting time, wasted time.
Wasted time.
It's funny how that keeps showing up in our show, doesn't it? But the notion of time as a super important measurement came about more and more because of the Industrial Revolution and because people were being paid for the hours that they were working somewhere. So that drove a really important focus on clocks, timekeeping, time recording, time management in that way. But it used to be such that passing time and past times were things that you would spend time doing. And it wasn't so much that you were trying to save time as much as you do now when everything is an efficiency model, but you were spending time, passing time, doing things that were your past times, the things that were enjoyable to you and that you'd like to spend your waking hours on. So these clocks help to remind you of a time before time was so manageable.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think they're gorgeous as works of art, and I totally get the concept of being in the present, right, and trying to be mindful. At the same time, I have this unnatural, I consider it natural, most people consider it unnatural, desire not to be late, right?
Yep.
To me, it is the biggest disrespect of the people that you're coming to work with or to meet or to, you know, do whatever, because you are now putting them on your time instead of everyone being on time to keep the time beat going here. And so it's one of the reasons why, you know, we mentioned my app Wasted Time, one of the reasons I created it, because it is that important to me. Out of that basic respect model, I would rather be an hour early than a minute late. It is that dramatic to me. And you know, there's other people that have different boundaries and different conditions, and, you know, respect that. I do think if we could change the passage of time and the stress of time to where a clock or a series of clocks like these would work for everyone,
right,
it would change a lot of behaviors, right? Because you're thinking more long term, you're thinking more as, you know, as the day as a whole, not as in, you know, the next hour I've got a meeting to do such and such, right? You're thinking about the cyclical nature of the moon's cycle, right? Instead of worrying that it's Thursday, right? Or the fifth day of the week. You're thinking of the passage of the seasons, which are much longer periods of time. So looking at longer horizons. So instead of saying, what are we going to do this quarter? You think about things from a longer time perspective. And that shift in mindset would make these clocks valuable to me. I do think they're gorgeous, and I like the design of them. I think the way they describe them and the way they've modeled them meet the desired goal of the clocks.
Right.
So, very cool. Very cool.
I'm super excited about it. You have to think of this as a major investment if you're going to go for
all three of them.
All three of them, or shoot, even one of them in a steel and glass enclosure, but they do get a little bit more affordable as you kind of scroll your way down. And actually, I was just reading the description on one of them. So the heart of the present, you know, so the in the internals there do say that automatically sets itself to the present day, no matter what day you turn it on. Right. Cool. So there's got to be a mechanism for figuring that out. So super cool. Now, talking about super cool, let's talk about what GitHub is doing in terms of their code. So according to this, Michael, I would think that your GitHub repository, which has been in existence for a while, and there was a snapshot taken of it in February. Your work is now in frozen ice.
It's in deep freeze
up in the Arctic in Norway, so that there will be a record for all time. They're estimating a 1,000-year vault for this, for what was created now, so that there's an opportunity to recreate wasted time 1,000 years from now based on what was frozen in the Arctic.
And they'll look at it and go, you know, maybe they should have got the designer who made these really cool clocks back then to work on the UI. but it's actually funny. Again, tying it all together, right? My app icon reminds me of the seasonal clock.
It kind of does, to some doesn't degree. It?
Yeah, and it's not intentional. And the new background UI is a little in the same kind of full rainbow set of colors that they do. No, this is actually really interesting. I've never done a time capsule, right? This is a time capsule. The value of time capsules are if we can still consume or understand the items that are in the time capsule.
Right.
So to your point, you know, let's say 1,000 years from now, and some of it eventually going to 10,000 years, could you get to the source code, right? Mm-hmm. Is it in a digital format that people understand well enough? I mean, they're printing it out on digital archive film reels. So are they listing all the source code, and are they only doing the current branch? Are they doing, you know, all the people who have done a branch of the base code, right? Is it just the top of the tree? You know, what's the basics of this? It drives a lot of questions, but the concept is kind of cool, just as a way of memorializing what's going on. And I can imagine, you know, 1,000 years from now, we always believe that 1,000 years now things will be better. So they could look at some of the algorithms going, oh my God, I can't believe they were just using quantum coding. Come on. That's so yesterday.
Or it could be that they're like, wow, they figured this out a long time ago and we could reuse that.
Yeah, but we'll use it on the using tachyon signals.
Maybe.
Very cool.
It is super cool in multiple
literally
realms, and the idea that of laser engraving active repositories onto quartz glass platters, you know, is sort of
that's
like
the 10,000 year one.
That's the right? 10,000 year version of all this. So interesting. Staying on theme of Kickstarters and interesting items. This is pretty fun. The prices go up in 4 minutes and 51 seconds, huh?
Well, it's interesting. I got 41 minutes and 14 seconds.
Oh, well, maybe I opened this one up a little bit earlier, so that's what it is. So there is a watch band for Apple Watch called the Mudra band.
Yes.
And what's interesting to me on this one, on a couple of different levels. So first of all, a mudra is a hand gesture that you might make. So some of the things that I've done within my ninja training, you know, has taught me a number of different mudras, which is kind of intriguing. And Michael, you're demonstrating a few ones that I haven't actually practiced.
No.
But
it's interesting. Speaking of time, sorry to interrupt, but I refreshed the page and it went from 41 minutes to 4 minutes.
Oh, really?
Even though I had been counting down this whole time.
Even though I had been counting down.
So I wonder if the code that was running got paused while that tab was in the background.
It could have been, or perhaps it was just hanging out in the in the Arctic, and you just warmed it up.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. So a mudra is a hand gesture.
Yeah. So it's a hand gesture. So here's the kind of problem that this particular watch band solves. It solves the issue of being able to control your watch with just one hand. So you could select something with a index finger just going down and to the right, or you could do a middle tap by touching your middle finger and your thumb to cancel.
Oh, without touching the watch itself.
Without touching the watch at all, right? So you're making a very simple gesture, right?
It's an audio podcast. I was trying to help people. They're like, yeah, with one hand. You know, you got the watch on the one hand, and you take your other hand and you touch the index finger to, right? So I was helping clarify.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so
this is with the hand that the watch is on, right? This is really cool from that perspective.
It is. So if you're driving, for example, and you are getting a phone call that you don't want to take, you could just do the gesture that you've assigned to reject the call with that one hand, and you're done.
Yes.
So it's an interesting 20th century, you know, first world kind of problem-solving technique to begin with. So I thought that was pretty cool. But the second thing is that if you're wearing your watch anyway, the ability to now measure and feel and then take advantage of that to control the technology that's around you is rather intriguing.
Yeah, what's cool. So they basically use a Bluetooth interface between the band and the watch to then run an app on the phone that is then sending signals to the other apps. This has been around for some time. I seem to remember about 3 or 4 years ago, them at CES as, hey, here's some really cool new technology. The fact that they're trying to, you know, grow the market for it is interesting. I'm wondering how they're addressing the fact that Apple Watch, which is what it's designed for in this Indiegogo campaign, does allow for other interactions with the watch. I mean, you can set it to when you raise it to automatically allow for you to say, hey, S word, and behave, do things, right? So I haven't looked to see all the new commands that are available in Watch OS 7 yet to control it with your voice. But as you're saying with driving, if you're in a meeting, being able to do it with a touch of a motion gesture of the hand that the watch is on,
right,
is less obtrusive than, you know, yelling at your watch. Then you're that crazy guy in the middle of the meeting yelling at the watch, hey, clear the text, I said. And then you also have, you know, coming soon, lots of extensions that are going on with shortcuts, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you can now, again, I haven't tried it yet, but you could take shortcuts, tag a shortcut to the Mudra app on the phone, on the watch, and actually do much more complex gestures than the ones that they list in the video and in the program itself. So this has interesting potentials. Anytime you change the input method, it's kind of cool.
Well, exactly. And if you combine it too with the whole haptic structure, where the haptic of your wearable device might provide you information that then you could react to without even looking at it at all, right? So maybe you're swooshing down the slopes wearing gloves and a ski jacket, and you have a particular haptic feedback thing that signals an action. You could respond to that action all without even looking at the device whatsoever.
Right. Well, you can make custom haptics for when certain people call, right? And so have this on, use the cellular watch,
right?
Have some AirPods Pros in your ear because you don't want them to fall out while you're skiing.
Sure.
And if you call, maybe I would answer. But if work called, maybe I wouldn't.
Yeah, so I could see some very interesting use cases for this. And the whole thing about training it, you know, the machine learning that goes along with that, because every, you know, person might be just a little bit different in terms of how their body conducts the electrical reactions for when they're moving one particular finger versus another, etc. Very, very cool on a lot of levels. So,
yeah,
nifty. Yep. As long as we're on Apple and Kickstarters and Indiegogos, I remember not so long ago, we saw a Kickstarter Indiegogo thing that allowed you to sample color. And I remember that being like super cool, right? So you could say, oh, I want that shade of color to be the paint on my walls in my house, and I can build that up in my AR environment or my my VR environment, blah, 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 blah. So apparently, you know, for those who are watching the patent space, we did have an article from MacRumors focusing on a patent application to allow for a pencil technology to, just like the eyedropper does on your screen, to sample a color. Potentially, a pencil could do the same thing.
Yeah, that's really cool if you think about it. In an artist's world, right, you're drawing a lot of things, and you have your palette, which is mixing a bunch of paints together, and you just take and touch it with the pencil. You now have that color. You throw it into the app, and you keep going. Matter of fact, one of the things that they released in, or that they will release once it's released, is an extension to the UI framework to go across iOS, iPadOS, and macOS on the color picker.
Oh, so I could pick a color on the iPad and essentially copy it via the clipboard or something to my Mac?
No. They're making the color picker the same across all platforms. So the UI element. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think about that, and one of the fun things I always look at every summer when I'm going through the new capabilities is, what could this mean for hardware?
Right.
So now if you have this common color picker, now having a pencil that provides this capability, in that space would start making it that maybe the pencil's coming to the Mac.
Ooh.
Very interesting.
Ooh.
You gotta think outside of the patent.
Well, I still kind of like the idea of being able to sample a color from a different device and share it. You know, so like I airdrop a picture that I just took with my phone, drop it on the Mac, manipulate it there a little bit, send it along to the iPad, email it to or Slack it to a friend, whatever. You know, so you could do some of those sort of things too. And
well, yeah,
you
if
could
you've
share
got
a, it that way, right? You could share. Yeah, the color.
Well, if you've got a common app, right, with the common UI elements, then having the app remember that you added this color to your palette becomes a lot easier than if you have a totally different palette on a different platform.
Yeah. Before we leave this one, there I just had to giggle because one of the people in the comments had written, "I can't wait to try it out with a chameleon."
So it would be white?
Well, it would depend on what the chameleon. It's chameleon color, don't.
That's right.
All right, so let's move from the visual, tactile, haptic to the auditory. And speaking of which, there's a speaker story that you found that was something worth hearing, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is actually really cool. So years and years ago, before I started writing Wasted Time, I had what I called my retirement app idea, which was to build an app to allow you to basically use the microphone and the headphones on your iPhone to dynamically get rid of background noises, right? The algorithms are fairly well known, and you can do some things with phase shifting that would allow you to reduce appropriate level of noises. And, you know, having an app make it $10 a pop suddenly puts you at the ability to wipe out $300 headphones, right?
Ding.
So that was the basic idea, and I just didn't have the time, inclination, or really the skills on that level of the programming to build it. I was talking with a colleague recently, like within the last year, because I grind my own beans at work, and we were thinking, well, you know how you had the cone of silence in the TV show Get Smart?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So could you do a directional cone of silence in a work environment to kill the grinding of the coffee pot noise, or the coffee noise. And we started playing with different ideas of you know, having noise dampeners in an office building to allow for reduction of background sounds, etc., especially in an open space. You know, some people don't like open space because they hear all the other noises. And he found this article. It's from Scientific American. And there's a group that has been testing this basic idea with speakers placement at the windows in restaurants, in schools, because of the current COVID situation. A lot of people need to have better airflow, so they're opening windows, mm-hmm. which is now letting in all the city noise inside a restaurant. You're in a nice, quiet little restaurant. They open up the windows, all the noise. So the idea is to have a noise-canceling speaker at the windows of all the windows that sample the sound and send canceling sound waves down to block the incoming sound. This is the cone of silence. Now, is it great? If you listen to the audio samples that they show, it reduces it some, and it's targeted frequencies. I think it was a 300 to 1,000 hertz.
Right.
And the idea is that's the sound of, you know, cars and trains and planes, things that would happen, in this case, in Singapore, where they're actually testing it. But I thought this was so cool.
So the more detailed article from Nature, you know, has actually some visualizations of what it would look like, as well as some of the frequency response elements for all of this. So that's kind of cool too, and would certainly do a lot to help improve airflow, like you're saying, Michael, as well as kind of tamp down.
That's a new word.
I like to go tamping on the weekends. But that would be actually be kind of cool. And you know, I was giggling before when you were talking about the cone of silence, and you know, that being important, like for an office building. And there are examples of white mm-hmm. noise generators and sort of like noise polarity reversing kind of structures that do happen in open spaces. And when they're obtrusive, sometimes it becomes too much, like you hear all the white noise and you're like, that's bothersome too. So yep. the really, really good ones would be in a spot where it's actually actively canceling it out, like you said. So one of the other annoyances that people have in open spaces oftentimes deals with smell. So wouldn't it be interesting to have a cone of smell removal? So you could say, oh, I'm not going to smell the smells coming from the microwave, from the popcorn that have been created.
Or the person who decided to microwave fish.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. So could you create a smell inverter that would detect the smell and then pump the appropriate inverse chemical into the environment?
Or would that just make more smells?
It might make more smells. I don't know. Maybe there's something there. Who knows?
Hey, quick, we won't post this. We got to quickly write up that patent. The smellinator.
The smell obliviator, smell of something.
Smellorama.
who knows?
Well, speaking of no, we won't go there.
yeah, let's not go there, but let's stick with sound a little bit. Well, it's not always sound, right? Logitech does a number of things other than sound, but
yes.
Logitech and Herman Miller, of all companies, have teamed up to help make you a better gamer, so to speak. And you've got a Herman Miller fantastic chair. I don't see it on you right now. Oh,
I have two.
Oh, I thought you were just giving me a gesture there.
I'm a Maruda. No, I do have a Herman Miller chair. I have one in my upstairs office and one in my downstairs office. I love my Herman Miller chairs. These are extremely comfortable. And when you're on conference calls from sunup till well past sundown, it is helpful to allow your body to breathe, mm-hmm. To be ergonomic, etc. And they've taken many of those same design elements and kind of hipped them up. To make them a gamer-friendly chair. I do find
it's hip to be chair.
It's hip to be chair. Hey, that's another episode title. What are we talking about? I find this one interesting. It looks like they have a lot of massaging type elements built mm-hmm. into the chair. The Herman Miller that I have has a lot of, you know, I won't say plastic. It's more composite. And this, for a $1,500 chair, this looks very plastic to me. It does have all the right levers and adjustments, et cetera, to make it highly ergonomic. I just don't know if I can justify spending, you know, 50% more on a chair just for gaming. Because my Herman Miller chairs weren't cheap either.
No. And going at about a grand a pop on them, and shoot, you know, with being in the chair as much as, I don't know, I'm finding myself, I'm sitting a lot more. So when my Apple Watch is telling me stand up, I'm like, dang, you know, I probably better, yeah, right?
I do. And I actually recently finally picked up a standing desk for the house, for one of my offices.
Right.
For during the workday, I try to do at least half the day standing.
So here when I first saw this, you know, I was thinking about Ian and his vest, and that it be cool with Logitech's experience from an audio capability too, to have a chair that provided that degree of sound and haptic feedback to you as well. So when the bass is thumping, so is your chair.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think they really missed the mark on this chair. It doesn't have any of that. This is just a really good, high-quality ergonomic chair.
Yep.
With you know,
with good controls,
glow, high-tech glow blue material in certain places to make it gaming-friendly.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll go with that. Now, you're a cool guy.
I try to be.
And, you know, it's summertime here in North Carolina, so it's kind of hot. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a way that you could be even cooler than you are, just, you know, kind of walking around?
Yeah, and it's funny because I think we did talk about this as a potential technology like 2 years ago or more on the show.
Mm, yeah.
So this is the Rion Pocket, I think is what it's called, which is a small device from Sony that fits into a special pocket in the back of your t-shirt, like right at the base of your neck and spine coming together.
Yep.
And it provides a cool sensor to reduce your body temperature. And it works a couple of hours, I think. It's like 2 hours, if I remember correctly. And it's about $125, which is kind of neat, especially, you know, I know people who are actually very temperature challenged, I guess is the correct way to say it, that they overheat. I mean, they literally overheat. It's like a, you know, a car with a bad radiator. And I'm actually going to send one of them this link because this is, I think this is really cool. It's not going to make you cooler.
Right.
Right, it's just going to reduce the temperature feeling. You're still going to sweat. It's still going to be hot. It's still going to be muggy, especially in August in North Carolina. it does have the ability to kind of just keep you a little bit more grounded temperature wise.
So I just noticed this, that it looks like it has an ability also to make you warmer too. So it could be. It looks like it run in reverse. Right, so
that would be a really bad idea.
it could be. I mean, it's showing that there's a cool setting, which is obviously in the summertime right now, that makes a big difference. But in the beginning of the article, it was talking about to cool or warm itself by absorbing and releasing. So that's kind of an interesting thing there too. When I've really had to be outside for longer times, I've liked are some of the more fabric capabilities, where you take a special cloth or towel and you dunk it in water, wring it out, and then let that do its absorption trick to kind of get you a little
Well, yeah, as the water evaporates away, it's going to reduce the temperature on the surface that it's touching. Yeah. I get migraines, and one of the things I use for migraines are these ice bands.
Mm-hmm.
And I will use those at times, right? You put it at the base of the neck. It sits in the freezer. It's kind of a liquid ice, and it does help.
Ah, yeah, they have to. Okay,
very cool.
So more cool stuff. I know you're a big space geek, and I enjoy this as well. Apollo space missions have always been part of my, you know, area of interest, and this is a neat combination of AI plus video capture from various space missions. And said super simply, and I love the name of this website, Science Alert, is where using a machine learning structure to increase the frames per second from the original moon landing video to make them be much more contemporary. So from, they were saying from 12 frames per second to like 60 frames a second, and enhancing dramatically the video that was taken by, you know, these, you know, cameras of the day in the 1960s, late 60s, 70s, and bring it together. I thought this was just fantastic, and it made it look like it happens.
Yeah, I think we've, again, talked about this on the show years ago. I had a guy that I was, when I was working on my master's, we were in the same master's program, and he had a company who was responsible for converting a lot of the old archive footage onto DVD. Mm-hmm. So I have a full set of DVDs of the Mercury and I think most of the Apollo missions, Gemini, Mercury, and Apollo, of the raw footage. So it's just raw footage. And it was converted with the technology at the time, early aughts, the fact that the frame rate is so low,
mm-hmm.
you get a lot of artifacting that makes it look bad, right? It's, you know, we remember the show, the streaming video that would be on the news back in the day, and when I first looked at the video here, I was like, well, that looks normal. Because that's the point. It looks normal, right? They using AI, they dynamically render the missing frames with what would have been there, you know,
if it'd been
at
captured.
The rate and paste between those two frames, right? And so they're actually increasing the frame rate four times. It's 4x increase from, you know, roughly 12, 15 to 60, which makes it look super smooth, like butter.
Now that you mention it, I do remember you saying your story about that from what we talked about before, and this contemporary element was just pretty incredible here. The further thing that I thought was neat is that what is it taking today to do this? So yeah. When you think about compute power today that's necessary to do this sort of thing, just flash forward another couple of few years, you know, that you could be doing this sort of thing on your phone on device and having it render itself directly.
Easy.
So
very cool.
Closing out today, because we're about at time, we've got a couple of fun examples here. I've been watching a little bit on Disney Plus of the older Clone Wars stuff. So I've been kind of rebooting my Star Wars experience when and where I can. And the Star Wars Squadrons game that's coming out just looks absolutely incredible.
Yeah, this is, we've talked about it recently before.
Yeah.
And this is a very detailed looking articles. There's a lot of game footage in it now talking about what the gameplay is like, etc. And I remember in Star Wars Galaxies, way back in the Dancing with Wookiees days,
mm-hmm.
When they finally gave space flight and space battles, how freaking hard it is to fly and deal with, you know, full 360, you know, full six axis control, flight, and fighting. It is unbelievably difficult. And the the footage that they show is incredible. The other thing that's really exciting about this is you can actually play the entire game in VR. So you can play the entire game with a VR headset on, which would, at least to me, seem to make the flight battles easier.
Right.
Well, because when you're looking at a screen and the whole screen is spinning around on you, it throws you off. And I started thinking about this because we've been watching The Mandalorian finally. And when you think about it from the perspective of the person sitting in the cockpit, you aren't flying in all weird axes and directions. Everything outside of you is changing axes and directions. You're always flying level, if you think about it, because you're sitting in a chair. That is your perspective. And the rest of the world is spinning around your prime axis. As soon as you kind of grok that, I think the battles will be easier. So I can't wait for this to come out. I don't know if I'll get it right away. I've got still plenty of other games I'm playing, but this looks gorgeous.
Well, and just taking a quick little peek at the webpage in Wikipedia for this guy, it looks like you, if you have a PlayStation 4, if you have an Xbox One, or if you have a Windows rig, you will have an opportunity to play this Frostbite-powered game.
And I have a Windows rig.
Yes, you
do. And I spec'd it out when I built it this year to handle VR. Yeah.
This will be
a. Now, I don't have a VR headset for it or anything yet. That's the next thing. But yeah, this looks impressive. And you found a really cool little Lego doohickey.
Yeah, so Lego, you know, being part of the secret super insider team from Lego, you know, new stuff that's coming. So on August 1st, there is a Lego Ideas creation, 3,662 pieces. They rate it as 18 plus, and you'll understand why in a minute. For $349.99, you can have your very own Lego grand piano. And but wait, there's more. it's not just a little grand piano. You get the bench, you know, with a crank that allows you to raise it up and down. So that's fun and nice. You can move the pedals up and down on the said piano. That's nice. What is even nicer is that the hammers and the keys that make up this grand piano actually work. Now, the video that they've produced here so far did not have any of the sound from said piano, but the hammers work. They strike the strings, which are not really strings, but they strike. And there is an electronic motor that comes along with it, with an interface to an app that allows you to program it, play music, and hear it. So just think about it. It's like a music box that you build and you could play and you could have, and it's just like, wow. Just wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really cool. I don't know if it's $350 cool.
Yeah. I'm not so sure either, but just the notion here of just how the motor would work and how striking the keys would work and the ability to look at it, take it apart, put it back together. I just super cool. I'm not sure that I would buy this one either, but I bow in the general direction of the Lego. Pretty
amazing. Yeah, very cool.
All right, well, with that, I think we have hit the end of our time, haven't we?
Absolutely.
So hope y'all enjoyed this week's edition. We hope and invite you back for our next and future editions too. Drop us a line, send us a tweet, tell us about what you're playing, you know, what you're hearing, what you're seeing, what you're you never know, it could show up on the next edition of
dot
Biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.